The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Remember, backed by Morse, that's their price protection promise. See dealer for all the details. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, want to save money on a new Cadillac? Make sure it's backed by Morse. Our good friend Brian Danahy, general manager at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ira and I love to go see him. Right now, not only can you lease a 2018 ATS sedan for just $279 a month, zero down, if you find a lower price on a new Cadillac, we'll match it or refund you $500. That's the price protection promise from Ed Morse. Rush to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Thursday, April 26th, NFL Draft Day on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. It only happens once a year. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. You just heard, of course, that we're presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And the star of the show is wearing orange. He's finished his soup, his sandwich, his chips. Took him forever, for goodness sakes. Mr. Ira Kaufman, how are you, Sage?
Where's the pickle, Steve? Where's the pickle? You know, you go into an establishment that you eat. It cost me $10.05. Of course, I didn't have the nickel, so I gotta get 95 cents worth of change. These are the things that aggravate you on a daily basis, Steve. It's D-Day, baby. It's D-Day. Welcome to all our listeners, our growing audience, Lee, online, growing audience podcast. And we've been waiting a long time for this day, and of course, I'm going to see a bunch of you people Thursday night. Can't wait for it.
I was just going to say that, of course, among all the people coming to the Bucks Uncensored, Joe Bucks Fan Draft Party, Buffalo Wild Wings, South Tampa, right on Southdale, Mabry, inside, outside, a couple of updates. There, a city alcohol license was secured. So there will be drinking outside in the parking lot under an 80 by 30 foot tent. When the music is thumping, it's going to be great outside.
It's going to be a full moon. Beautiful.
The weather is supposed to be great. They're going to pull down the music for the picks. Of course, there'll be massive LED screens outside. And that's just for the people who want to be outside. You can be inside 300-something seats in Buffalo Wild Wings, comfortable at your table with a menu. Or there's going to be a buffet running all night long. Unreal. But now there were already people, Ira, who are going to bring you to this draft party a beet salad, bottles of Riesling.
Am I going to have to reach into my pocket on Thursday night, Steve?
I doubt it. And now, of course, someone's going to bring you a roll of nickels so you don't get screwed every time you go to Panera. But that's going to be a lot of fun. Later, we'll hear from the commish on that. Let me have a little fun with you, Ira, because Lee's here and Lee's got strong opinions. Let me have a little fun. Let's start with that. I'm going to throw a hypothetical trade at you, Ira, for the Bucks.
The last time you sidetracked me, you asked me to give a grade on Jason Light's draft class, and I gave A-, and I got buried from the fans. Way too high, Kaufman, you know, marking on a curve. What are you doing, Ira?
You weren't in lockstep with the fans. Most fans were BB+, so that was where it came in. But, yeah, that's splitting hairs. All right, Ira, it's draft night, and here are the Bucks, probably yearning for Saquon Barkley.
Aching
for Saquon Barkley. Or maybe even Bradley Chubb, possibly. We don't know how their draft board looks or where the mindset is. But we know Dave Gettleman has a great relationship with Jason Light. They just pulled off this clandestine deal that they managed to hide from the New York media.
All about relationships, Steve.
Well,
about it.
It's important with the trade-ups and the trade-downs. Critical. Now, if Dave Gettleman says, Jason, I'll flip with you. We don't want a quarterback, and we have some good ideas of what we want to do.
We'll move back to 7.
I'll give you 2. We'll move back to 7. You give us a second rounder next year and Chris Godwin. Do you do that deal, Ira?
Where does he come up with this stuff, DeKemper? Where does he? Now, wait a minute. You want to trade DeSean Jackson right now. Now you're dumping Godwin. Well, what's going
on here? It's a hypothetical. What?
You know, the next thing you'll bring, you have to bring back Lewis Murphy as your third receiver over here. Hypothetical? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. First of all, Who says they only want a second next year? I think it'll be a second this year.
It's a hypothetical.
To me, that's a deal breaker. A second this year is out. They already don't have a third.
I agree. This year, next year. Who's going to be picking next year?
Well, he threw Godwin. He threw Godwin into the mix.
Well, I'm going to add to that in a second.
I'm not in the mood to give up Chris Godwin.
I am not either. But I don't know if Steve's thinking what I'm thinking. But continue, Mr. Kaufman, as Chris Russo would say.
Deals off, Dave. I love you like a brother, but no deal. No deal.
Just to clarify, I'm not thinking anything. I strictly wanted to put a couple of hypotheticals in front of you. That was one of them. I have no thoughts on the matter, Lee.
I'm going to say no on that, Lee.
Here's what intrigues me. My initial reaction is hell no, not Godwin.
And you're saying the Bucs take Barkley, right, in that scenario. That's what you're saying.
No, I didn't say that. I said if they have designs on that number two pick and Gettleman says, I'll give it to you, Jason, for a two next year and Godwin.
My initial knee-jerk reaction, hell no with Godwin. But then... As I wrote this morning on JoeBucksFan.com, this nitwit out of Florida that can't put the bong down, even though millions of dollars are at stake, this guy's going to slip to probably the fifth round if Tyreek Hill is an example. Yeah. This guy's going to slip to the fifth round. Fifth round's a throwaway pick. I know some fans out there, fifth round's a throwaway pick. How can you say that? Well, you Luke Stocker lovers, there's your fifth round pick. The last time any fifth round pick did anything for the Bucs. So give me a break.
So you're talking about a problem child in Gainesville.
Potentially, but you're going to get him cheap. And he's talented. He's a first round talent. But he's immature, head case, nitwit, addicted to the bong, whatever you want to use.
Lee, I've already seen Godwin do it at the pro level.
I have too. I'm a big Godwin fan, but I'm thinking if you can get this guy so cheap. And you could.
You don't know that you can get him in the fifth round. You don't know that.
Well, you can get him in the fourth round then.
All right.
And there again, fourth round pick outside of Quan Alexander once every 5 years.
But you're still leaning no also. Leaning no.
I love Godwin, yes. But, a huge but. And if you've done your research on this guy, and you probably have because he's in Gainesville, and you think, again, this is a first round talent, it makes me pause.
Now, Steve, one thing you didn't mention in your hypothetical.
Well, a couple things.
Who went first?
Let me just clarify a couple things before the hounds go
before
crazy
the hounds.
On the comments. Luke Stocker was a fourth round pick, but the Bucs had a tremendous success with Mike Williams as a fourth round pick. Similar sort of circumstance without the bong. Go ahead.
Who went off the board first in your scenario? It matters. If Barkley went off the board first, we're probably not even having this conversation.
A quarterback.
All right. Okay. So Barkley's out there.
All right.
I'm still saying no. No, not doing it. Not doing it.
All right. You're not doing it. Now, Ira, let me throw this at you. The draft goes back to Denver. Okay. Number 5 overall pick. The Denver Broncos are on the board.
Nobody knows what the hell the Broncos are going to do.
Nobody knows if they like a quarterback, although we've talked about how they probably don't.
Do they like Chubb?
We don't know. But here's who's left. The Broncos called Jason Light and say, Jason, we got all kinds of trade down offers on the table, on the phone right now. Barkley's still on the board. I know you want Barkley. You want to move up? I'll take 7th, and you give me a 4th round this year and a 4th round next year.
To move from 7th to 5. I say, where do I sign? Where do I sign? That deal I do, Lee. That deal I do. Look, Barkley's the consensus best player in the draft, Saquon Barkley. You know who might be the number 2 guy in the draft? My man, Quentin Nelson. I'll bring him up again. And you got the, come on, Ira, what are you doing?
Boy, when I need a 50-yard touchdown pass, I sure do have a guard run out there.
Now, in that scenario, the Bucs would not have a 3rd or a 4th. A 3rd or a 4th. All they got is a 2nd.
Yeah.
It makes it tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got holes to fill. You still got corner out there. You know, offensive line would be nice. For Barkley, to guarantee that I can get Barkley at 5 and give up a 4th and a 4th, I think I would do that, Lee. I think I would do it.
Steve was right at a double check, and this is what happens when you don't have good eyesight. Last night when I did research about draft picks, I swore it said 2 5th-round picks. When Locker was drafted. Well, he was drafted in 4th. Thought the 4 was a 5. But speaking of 5th-round picks, who was the 5th-round pick that year? We're talking about when fans freaked out when I said a 5th-round pick is a throwaway pick. Ahmad Black. Boy, that was a valuable pick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, Light's got you know, a history of making some nice second-day picks.
You know, if Denver likes who they could get at seven, and their guy, whoever that is there, and they feel they can do it because they know the Colts won't take a quarterback, who knows? I don't know. But that could be out there, so I wanted to get your take, Sage.
How many more of these hypotheticals you got over there, isn't it?
All day long, right?
We could go all day long with this. But trading up. So I wanted to lead that to trading up. If you had to step into the mind of Jason Light, a man who you have hounded many times by phone, by text, at the NFL owners meetings, wherever you could
do it. You said I buried into him like a mollusk. That was your phrase.
You've done that before. I've seen you do it many times. Do you think he is more interested in this draft? If he could pick, Jason Light could pick, would he rather trade up or trade back?
Well, I'm going to throw a little monkey wrench into this whole process here, Lee. I was watching NFL Live on Tuesday, and Bill Polian, Hall of Fame executive, was at the board with the lovely Wendy Nix, one of Lee's favorites. Not top favorite, but she, you know, she cracks the top 10 list. And maybe, you know, Louis Riddick. Well, anyway, they were going through the picks.
Wait a minute. Louis Riddick is not on Lee's top 10 list.
That's
go ahead.
Correct. 20 maybe. All right, so when they got to number 6, which was the Colts, you know, Riddick, you know, pushed the name Derwin James or Minka Fitzpatrick or something. And Polian said, now wait a minute. Quentin Nelson is still on the board under the scenario. And Polian goes, watch out. Watch the Bears. Watch the Bears go from 8 to 6 to grab Quentin Nelson. And I'm just suggesting to you two guys, assuming Barkley and Chubb had already been picked, that is a killer scenario, in my opinion, for Jason Light. That's a killer. Because then the last of the big three are off the board, and you can say take Derwin James or Denzel Ward or Fitzpatrick if you're Light and stay at 7 and say that's the guy we wanted all along. There's no way. I'm going to say it right now, DeKemper. I want you to challenge this. There's no way in this world that Denzel Ward, Derwin James, or Minka Fitzpatrick has a higher rating on the Bucs board than Quentin Nelson. That is not happening.
I don't.
That
think,
is
I
not
think you're
true.
Right. I think you're correct. I believe you're correct.
So to me, that's a crushing blow to Light if that happens. If the Bears are aggressive, move from 8 to 6. Give the Colts a second-round pick. We want Nelson. He's not getting past the Bucs, the Bears think, which he probably wouldn't. Mm-hmm. We're going up to 6, taking him before the Bucs pick. That is a killer move. That's not going to make Buck fans very happy at our party Thursday night. I can tell you that right now.
A couple of elements to that. First, of course, Polian was Colts general manager, so you would think he's got a little bit of knowledge of the situation.
That's a great point.
But here's the deal, right? The Colts are the power players in this draft because they've got 3 second-round picks, and they don't need a quarterback, and they're at number 6. So it's pretty safe bet that the Bears, because their new O-line coach was Notre Dame's O-line coach, they need they need Nelson. You know, the whole thing there, local, whatever. I don't think that would be a surprise. And there's a lot of buzz out there, multiple buzz. Lee wrote about it this morning, but other people have written it, not just Daniel Jeremiah talking about it. The Colts seem to love linebacker Roquan Smith. Now, what do the Colts know? They know that the Bucs aren't taking a linebacker
so
at 7.
So they can move back to 8.
So they can comfortably move back to 8. It's probably one of the more likely scenarios in the draft, but you never know what the Colts are going to be offered. But if you have three second-round picks, are you really looking to trade back for a bounty? I mean, they've already got a ton of good picks.
You know what, Lee? That almost begs the question. If Nelson is sitting there when the Colts are on the board at 6, should Light make the Colts an offer to make sure he gets Nelson? That's interesting.
I am sure that's not only gone through Light's head, but Ballard's head as well.
So now you're talking about only moving back one spot for the Colts. You know, I ain't giving them a second-round pick.
No.
You know, to move up one spot. I'm not doing that. But, like you said, the Colts are going to get their guy at 7 if they move back one. You know, if the Colts aren't you know, locked in on Nelson, they're going to get whoever they want at 7. So, I think there's going to be a little pressure on Light. I'm still, maybe Light doesn't look at Nelson the way I do. Maybe Buck Scouts don't, but I think they do. And assuming Barkley and Chubb are gone, because they're as much of a factor as Nelson. I'm not saying they're not. You know, in fact, I'd probably take either one of them ahead of Nelson if I'm the Bucs, Chubb or Barkley. But I'm assuming they're both going to be gone. And to me, Nelson's the third guy. Big drop-off after the big three, as far as the Bucs are concerned.
Yeah.
A little pressure on Light that, hey, I don't want the Bears jumping me and getting Nelson. Very interesting spot right there. Very interesting.
You know, Daniel Jeremiah, the fact that he says he's hearing way too much chatter about Roquan Smith and the Colts, and so he believes it's going to happen. Jeremiah's got contacts. He's a former scout with three different teams. I know for a fact he's tight with several general managers. Like
people are very high on that linebacker. They're high.
Oh, yeah. And what I was going to say is I know general managers, when Daniel Jeremiah's in town, they immediately go out to have dinner with him. He's that tight with some general managers. He's obviously got buddies that are scouts that aren't going to stab him in the back with information. But the thing about Roquan Smith is, I may have said this at a previous podcast, on face value it sounds stupid as can be, but it's something Pat Kerwin came up with. It's a compelling thought. Bucks have the worst defense in the league last year. Pat Kerwin said, if you got the worst defense in the league and the best defensive player is on the board, you go get that guy and you find a way to get him on the field. I don't care how many linebackers you have. I'm not saying they should do that. Not saying they will do that. It's a compelling thought that if this guy is that much of a stud linebacker, you might do that. But the problem is, do you trust Mike Smith to find a way to get him there? I don't.
Polian also said, guys, that if the Colts stay at six, don't entertain trade offers, stay at six and take Roquan Smith, he said that's a very good move for them. Of course, they play Tampa 2, and he'd be the Will linebacker. And as Polian said, that's the number two spot that you have to fill. Obviously, three technique is the first to play that Tampa 2. But he doesn't think that would be a bad pick for the Colts if they stay at six and take Smith.
Speaking of good picks, fanretreat.com.
He's smooth.
Now, aside from Fan Retreat, your guy Sean being at the draft party with his team from Fan Retreat, giving away towels tomorrow night, also letting people sign up for huge discounts and a lot of cool stuff coming. But fanretreat.com is your place to go for lightning tickets, like a StubHub type of setup.
I've been checking out the website. It's very easy to use.
Very easy.
And impressive.
You can get all your tickets there for all events, concerts, whatever. Bette Midler, flights, hotels, rent-a-cars, everything you need at fanretreat.com in one-stop shop. So we're excited about that. Their new redesigned website's coming out very soon, possibly by the time this podcast is up, actually. And as well as their app, which is going to be allow fans to coordinate tailgates and travel so they don't have to just constantly be sending group texts and really cool stuff there.
I think, they want you to click on how many tickets you want, Lee, for a road game. And they got a picture of the stadium. You can almost pick you can almost pick out your seat. It's a beautiful thing.
Because, you know, Ira, let me just say this. You don't need to go to Fan Retreat to get a picture of the stadium, but that's an added bonus, right?
Well, but I'm saying it's got the seats that are available.
You like that?
The view of the
stadium.
The seat view, you mean?
Yeah, seat view.
Okay.
You like that.
They got the whole thing.
You like that. Pictures, the map. You can, yeah.
The menu, the stadium menu. That's important.
The seat view helps, yes.
Ira Kaufman loves fanretreat.com. Check it out. That's where you get your tickets. Start searching. Great deals. They're constantly shopping for the cheapest ticket offers. And, you know, you'd be surprised. With Fan Retreat, you're not going to have all these hidden, crazy, wacky fees. You get some other places. And you can use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. Now, Sage, I have to pin you down, right? This is what we do before the draft. We're out of time. The draft is coming up tonight. Second round tomorrow. Ira Kaufman, what do the Bucks walk out of the first two rounds of this draft with? And give us a take for the rest of the draft on the scope of, I'm not asking you to do a mock, to the scope of what they walk away with here. What's going to happen?
Ira's seven-round mock.
They get O.J. Howard at seven. No, I'm kidding.
Wrong year.
Hey, I nailed that last year. You know, and,
you had intel.
I had intel. All right, this year, the big three are going to be off the board. Sorry, Buck fans. The Bucks will trade from 7 to 12.
So Cutter's going to draft Mike Florio.
And the Bucks will pocket a third-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year in the move from 7 to 12. The Bills will go up. They'll take a quarterback. God bless them. The Bucks will sit at 12. And at 12, they will get value with Fitzpatrick or James at value. I don't think it's value at 7. but I think they'll take one of them. In the second round, I think they'll take a corner. I think they'll take a corner and leave running back for guys who get cut and later in the draft.
So they're going to put all their eggs in Peyton Barber's basket.
A lot of eggs in Peyton Barber's basket, but he's going to have a cohort in 2018. And it's not going to be Jacquizz Rodgers. He's going to be the third back. Charles Sims, sorry to say, Lee, might be back on the Bucks. He's not going to split. They're going to have a running back to split carries with Peyton Barber, but the guy's not on the Buck roster yet. I think he's probably going to get picked up in late August.
All right, so that's what you think is going to happen. Lee, tell me what you think will happen in the first two rounds and then a rounded view of the rest of the draft for the Buccaneers.
But I have to qualify it. I've said this since the combine. I came back from the combine. No one told me this. Light didn't tell me this. Cutter didn't tell me this. No Buck scout told me this. No one told me this. I just read the tea leaves. I read the body language in our private sit-down with Cutter, private sit-down with Light, what they had to say on the record, what they had to say off the record, body language. I came out of there convinced. If Quentin Nelson, and I would not do this. I'm going to be clear. Steve's asking me what I think will happen.
I've won you over, DeKemper.
You didn't win me
over. I feel very proud of this.
I did not see you in Indianapolis, sir. I came away from the combine. Matter of fact, I told someone in the Bucs media, I said the following, and this is my answer. If Nelson's there, they're taking him.
I don't disagree with
you. I would not do that. I want to be clear. I would not do that. But if Steve's asking what I think the Bucs are going to do,
yep,
that's what's going to happen if Nelson's there. Got to qualify.
What if the big three are gone?
You know, you keep hearing all this chatter about Fitzpatrick and James. I don't know if that's smokescreen. It just seems awful high.
It seems high.
And the word, if this Derwin James was as transcendent of a player as people claim he is, and I'm not saying he's not, I sure didn't see that at Florida State. When I say a transcendent player, I'm thinking Troy Polamalu as a safety. Boy, that guy was quite literally all over the field. He was a one-man gang. He changed games defensively. I didn't see that at Florida State. Now, is that because James was hurt his senior year? I mean, I know he had knee surgery. Because he wasn't 100% healthy? That could be. Is it because he played for the Lovie Smith of college football? Charles Kelly, who was a completely inept defensive coordinator? It could be. Is it a combination of things? It could be. The way people are blowing smoke about James, and I'm not saying he's not, I did not see that at Florida State. So if he's supposed to be the next Troy Polamalu, to me that's a mystery. And if he is, that's a hell of a pick at 7.
All right, I want to say this.
Wait, let Lee finish, because I know he's a little bit short on time.
Yeah, second round, you said?
Second round, and then the rest of the draft.
I'm going to go anti-Ira here. They're going to get a running back. Could be a guy from Auburn. Could be one of the Georgia two running backs.
Nick Chubb. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be Nick Chubb. It could be Darius Geis if he slides a little bit, which he may, because there's some the field concerns. Mike Mack has spoken about that. We shall see. But they don't – I'll say this again. I've said it before on previous podcasts. I had a Bucs offensive coach tell me back in January – we were just BSing together. It was off the record, so I'm not going to say who it is, but he told me. I brought up offensive line to him, and I've not been in the camp that the offensive line is horrible. And that was before. This is back in January. And he looked at me and he said, offensive line was the furthest thing from our problems. And we talked, well, what was it? And he basically told me, no, he didn't basically, he told me, one-dimensional. They were too one-dimensional because they had no running attack. So is that all of a sudden solved with Peyton Barber? If an assistant coach says that was their biggest problem, you got to figure Light knows that. You got to figure Cutter knows that. So that's why I hope they address running back. I don't know if they will. They spent enough time researching these guys, bringing guys in, sending coaches out on the road. So I'm going to go ahead and guess. I know you're trying to pin me down. Nick Chubb.
I want to weigh in on these two safeties for a second, Steve.
Please do. And just as a 10-second aside, I just happen to be on fanretreat.com, Ira, and I see that for the New Orleans game opening day, somebody can fly out nonstop on Spirit Airlines that morning, Saturday morning, come back Monday, $176.
Sign me up right
round
now.
Trip.
Round trip,
$176.
That's a beautiful thing.
Go ahead.
All right, back to the safeties. Now, Steve, correct me. You've been reading about the safeties, the scouting reports, Lee. Here's what I'm saying. And I think this almost holds true for Fitzpatrick and James. I don't want the first thing that I hear that the guy's an outstanding blitzer. That's not the first thing I want to hear from the safety position. You know what I'm saying? What I want to hear is the guy can cover. He can cover. And I'm not comparing Minka Fitzpatrick necessarily to Mark Barron. But Mark Barron was a safety from Alabama. He gets taken by the Bucks, and within you know, a month of the regular season, he can't cover anybody. We find out that he's, you know, he's an eighth man in the box, and he's this and he's that. He's the old John Lynch, when you could actually play that position back then and hit people, and now you can't. So I'm a little concerned, you know, jack of all trades, Fitzpatrick. You know what that could also mean? That he doesn't excel in any one area. I mean, I'm hoping these guys are going to be good players. But, Steve, you got to cover people. You're playing against Drew Brees, Ryan, and Newton. You got to cover people. And hitting is being taken out of the game. Am I telling you anything you don't know? It's being taken out of the game.
Oh, of course, that's the goal. That's the goal, the type of hitting that is an extreme impact, of course.
You know, we had Deshaun Goldson here. He was ineffective. He was absolutely ineffective. Whereas in with the 49ers, in a different era, surrounded by different players, the guy was a Pro Bowler. So a lot of it is circumstance, and now you got to factor in the rules. Physical play from the safety position, it's being phased out, Steve. It's absolutely being phased out. It's less paramount. It's less paramount.
Well, there's less value in the position because of it, and that's part of your job is to explain to your Hall of Fame brethren that safety isn't what it is today. There was more value back then, and John Lynch.
That's why I think seven's a little bit high, and if you can move back to 12 and pocket a nice third-round pick, then maybe you take Fitzpatrick or James, and it makes more sense.
Ira, I'm not going to bloviate here on what I think, but I will just make it quick. I think the Bucs walk out of this draft with two running backs and two cornerbacks. I think they're going to walk out with those positions. I don't think they trade down. I think ultimately they stay where they are, and I don't think I agree with you. I don't think the big three will be on the board at that point. It just feels like there's too much chatter around Nelson for him to fall. But we saw this with O.J. Howard, so who knows? The draft's a crapshoot.
Are you okay with Nelson at seven?
Absolutely. And I think if they go Nelson at seven, I think you're going to see the cornerback next, much to the chagrin of Bucks fans, and then they'll wait on the running backs and maybe try to trade up into the third round, grab somebody they like. There are a lot of running backs in this draft, a lot of defensive backs. But if I had to guess, I'll say they stay put. I'll say they go with the best available defensive back on their board, whether it's Fitzpatrick or Ward. I'd rather see him go the cover corner route. And then the running back will come in round two. And then they'll just go from there, another running back, another corner. And
I wish Ward was a little bit bigger. I wish he was a little bit bigger. He's not a prototype cover corner, Steve, because otherwise I think they'd be very safe that at least they're going to get Ward at the very least. You know, even if the big three are gone, you got Ward sitting there as a corner. I think Ward's a little short in all respects, a little bit short of being worth that seventh pick. I think that hurts the Bucks this year a little bit.
Everybody would like him to be over 6 feet tall, but that's not the case.
I wish he was as good as a prospect as Lattimore. Then I wouldn't have any qualms about taking him at seven.
It's funny, the balance of the perception always changes. It's like a lot of people thought Hargraves was too short, but that really hasn't been his problem, height. It's been a lot of other things. And you mentioned before everybody being high on Roquan Smith, and the word high made me think of Hargraves. So let me go to that for a minute. The marijuana video that circulated, now that we're away from it and we've stepped past that, it's been a month already. Do you think that the existence of it, the smoking video, did that impact the Bucks a little bit in thinking that, you know, even if we think Vernon will come back physically, that, you know, maybe he just doesn't have it where we want him to have it mentally to be that guy, and we have to look more toward replacing him on the roster?
I don't think so, Steve. I don't think so. I think 95% of the concerns about Hargraves are his on-field play. You know, look, Steve, we're honest with our listeners. It's weed. It's weed. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, you know, 60% of NFL players smoke weed regularly. 60% might be kind, Steve. You know, 70% of the people on this podcast might fall into that category. But I don't think it's a major concern.
You said those were burned pork ribs on your back. Go ahead.
No, I don't think that's a major concern. It's all about the ball skills, playing with confidence, Hargraves. They gotta get him playing with more confidence and stop playing so passively. Mr. 10-yard cushion. Why does he have a 10-yard cushion? Is that Mike Smith? Does Hargraves need that? people are a little conflicted about that, but he's not playing with any confidence, Steve. That's the big problem with Hargraves.
All right, now we've been through the draft, Ira, and you know, I didn't fire back at you to let it go around the horn here, but a lot of fans who trust you, thousands and thousands of listeners you have every single podcast, Ira, these people are a little troubled that you just said the Bucs are going to go defensive back with their first two picks and then get the running back maybe on the third day. Maybe Charles Sims comes back, and that's the way it plays out. Now, keep in mind, that's what you think is going to happen. So a lot of people are troubled. They want that running back. Why do you think the regime will grab two defensive backs first? What's the driving force there? Is it Mike Smith? Is it just realizing that the talent is so lacking?
I think part of the thinking is that if they can significantly upgrade the secondary, they're fairly set at linebacker, although, you know, you got the Beckwith injury. They've totally overhauled up front. I think the thinking is this could be a pretty darn good defense. And running backs, while not a dime a dozen, you can find guys. You can find guys that get cut, that don't quite make a team that's stocked at running back. They cut a pretty good running back. You can maneuver at running back. They're out there. Whereas, you know, a real quality corner, even safety to a lesser extent, teams don't want to give those up. And, Steve, they're so bereft at corner right now, mostly because Hargraves hasn't developed. And Grimes, you know, we don't know about his future past this year. They can't let that position go unaddressed in the draft. They just can't.
And I agree with you. There was a story, maybe I'll retweet it, from the owners' meetings where it felt to me, sitting right next to Dirk Cutter, literally arm's length from him, and the way he said it, it felt like, hey.
Didn't he say, you would think we got to address the secondary?
Sort of said defensive back, cornerback's a no-brainer. And he loves, he's said it many times, loves the crop in this year's draft. I haven't heard Dirk Cutter, Ira, once say how much he loves the running backs in this draft. It's interesting. I think they go there. And Lee, who has taken off, we're going to miss Lee for the rest of the podcast, unfortunately. If he heard us talking about this, he'd think about it more, and he'd be getting his candles ready to light for the soul of the young cornerbacks and defensive backs coming to this team.
The single biggest need for the 2018 Bucs, as presently constituted, is cornerback. I don't think you can argue with that.
All right, Ira, right now we're going to take a 90-second break, maybe 80 seconds. We're going to hear from the commish about tonight's draft party where you have to be, and they do it all again on Friday.
The 2018 Miller Lite Bucks Uncensored Draft Party is coming up fast, April 26th and 27th. It's a two-night event, but that first night, it's going to be wild. We've got a $20 all-you-can-eat buffet, 2,500-square-foot tent outside, a huge HD LED screen to show the draft, and a DJ pumping tunes all night to keep the party going all night long. We will have giveaways sporadically throughout the night, and a major announcement. If you're a Bucks fan, you are going to want to be in attendance for this big announcement we will have that Thursday night. Again, two-night event. It's April 26th and 27th at the Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa off of Southdale Mabry. Join me, Justin Pulowski, the commish, for the 2018 Miller Lite Bucks Uncensored Draft Party. And speak softly and carry that big mother boom, you dump a stick.
Man, the commish is fired up. It's going to be so great tonight, Ira. I don't even know what to say. And just in case you were wondering, Ira, the all-you-can-eat buffet kicks off at 6 o'clock, and I will be buying you a wristband. So despite all the gifts that you'll get, the free drinks, I'm paying for your food, so you'll be all set. You can stuff your face all night.
Your largesse knows no bounds, Stephen. You know, the Bucks are throwing their own party, Steve, but I think people are going to have more fun at our party.
Yeah, totally different scene, and I can't even describe it, but the video that'll be going viral on social media, the kind that you would watch and say, I wish I had gone, what was I thinking? Especially when one of our surprise guests is revealed. Be there. That's all I can say is be there.
Rock Riley is now committed, right, Steve?
Rock Riley's in the house. We had some beers on Sunday night, and Rock, he soaked me. He soaked me for like five beers. I couldn't believe it.
Is he going to take video too, Steve?
Rock's going to take some video for the website, so we've got it all covered, all angles. I'm sure, Ira, you'll be seen on television, website, everywhere, all over the place.
Todd Wright making an appearance, Steve? You never know.
Actually, he's not, because he's resting up at the big Todd Wright Tour Championship is Saturday morning at.
Whoa.
And Todd's got a lot to do. But for those not listening to his Lightning podcast, tune in. The numbers are good. He's really, really good. And another plug for our Joe Boltz fan podcast every Friday. and the Todd Wright's doing his playoff podcast right on JoeBucksFan.com. You can find him at iTunes, just like this podcast. Sage Reviews, leave them right there on iTunes. We love reading those. Podbean, Google Play. And it's funny, Ira, one of our listeners left a not very nice
sarcastic
comment on the podcast, but on the website under the comments section. And I basically, like I do for the ones that are malicious in nature or misrepresent, I delete them. Or I delete it and explain why, whatever. Well, the guy complained. He said, hey, you say leave a comment. We love the feedback, positive and negative. And I said, excuse me. I say go to iTunes or Podbean, leave your comments there on the platform. If you're going to write nasty stuff about Joe or Ira on the website, it's not staying there, pal. So let me clarify for those who don't understand.
Also, Steve, I know that you get a few sarcastic remarks from people that when you trumpet that our podcast is doing well on Google Play and has for a long time, some people say, "Ah, Google Play means nothing. What about iTunes?" Explain that to me, Steve. I'm a little short technologically wise.
Well,
they're screaming now. What about iTunes?
Yeah, I'd love to explain this stuff. Look, there are many podcast platforms out there to where you can listen to podcasts, and the podcasts appear on all these platforms. It's like a TV station that shows all. Imagine they all showed the same show, right, Ira? Imagine if every network showed the same show. Well, the question would be, where do you watch the show? So
Podbean's another one?
Podbean, there's Player FM, there's so many of them. But the big ones are iTunes, Podbean is pretty big. Google Play is growing massively because people have the browser in their phone and it's big, it's Google, and you can imagine. But iTunes, Apple Podcasts is the big player. But Google Podcasts is growing quickly. And on that platform, on that station, if you will, on Google Play, your podcast ranks top 50, all genres, all themes, all subjects in the United States of America.
Why are we doing well on that particular Google? Why on Google are we doing well?
I don't know exactly. Got some theories. Nobody cares about that stuff with the draft coming up. But you still do extremely well on iTunes. Every one of your episodes, when it posts on iTunes for Bucks-related episodes, it hits number one within a handful of hours. So, and the rankings are different, real-time, episode, entire podcast. So it's all different, but the bottom line is, Ira, you're a star, and people know it.
So we want comments on the venue that the person's listening.
Yeah, where you listen to the podcast is usually always a chance to review it or leave a comment, either one. Some people just leave a 4 or 5 star review and they don't comment, but they're registered users within that thing. So here you are. I'm looking right now. Bucks Podcast, there you are. Top episode on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Ira Blast Fan Negativity, Talk Saturday, Brian Glazer, High Five, the whole thing's right there. But this one was funny, Ira. Everybody will humor me with this one here. This recent review on the podcast. You're going to love this. You ready for this, Ira?
Is this on the iTunes review or Google Play?
This one is on iTunes. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but okay. Ira is excellent, knowledgeable, funny, a true insider. The only thing keeping the podcast from a 5 are the humorless, know-it-all, nothing stumble bums who ride his coattails. So, and it goes on.
I told my brother not to put his name on that damn thing. Come on, Barry, don't write in over there. It's too obvious that it's my own brother in California.
So there you go. We always appreciate all those types of ratings of the podcast. Anyway, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com.
Speaking of podcasts, right?
Yeah, and his PFT PM podcast, and of course people see him on NBC Sports. He's really, at this point, the number one. Jay Glazer is nice and all that, but Florio is the number one insider in the NFL, and you know that very well. Now, Florio told on his podcast on Friday, he told his 2-year-old Dirk Cutter story. And I'll sum it up in about 30 seconds. Florio, at the time, had Cutter on the air on his show, his radio show, 2 years ago after Cutter was hired. He typically has the coaches on. And there was some scuttlebutt out there that, hey, you know, maybe Light and Cutter, maybe they had a little palace coup and sort of did what they had to do to nudge Lovey out. And, you know, so Cutter could get the job. Some people were talking about that, especially those who loved Lovey Smith. and facing a third of the fans. I remember a poll on Joe Bucks Fan. One third of the fans didn't want Lovie fired. They were into Lovie.
And there were some rumors at the time that other teams were interested in hiring Cutter as a head coach.
Yeah, Cutter interviewed with Miami. He interviewed with San Francisco, which actually interviewed him with DeBartolo down here because Cutter had hip surgery after the season. And I say to a lot of fans, did Cutter really engineer looking for a coach's job when he's going in for hip surgery 3 days after the season? I mean, that's not exactly how you put on your best look and go interview for jobs. But anyway.
So Florio brought up the subject to Cutter.
He brought up the subject to Cutter in sort of a gentle way on the air and see if Cutter wanted to just address it, you know, which most people appreciate a chance to clear the air. Well, Cutter didn't like it. He took it as a, hey, I'm a loyal guy and I would never do such a thing. And who the hell are you to ask?
Thought he was ambushed, Steve. Yeah,
thought he was ambushed, whatever. But Florio didn't know. So Florio's at the owners' meetings, the NFL owners' meetings, 3 months later, and goes over to Cutter and says, hey, Dirk, how are you? Thanks for coming on the
air. It's a casual party, right? Casual.
Casual, fun party, and Dirk Cutter let him have it. And Mike Florio finally told this story 2 years later, and Florio explained that Cutter didn't even let him respond, that it was not, he was not going to hear Florio's explanation. And Florio said, in all my time dealing with NFL coaches, GMs, owners, people pissed at me, everybody eventually lets me get in my say after they blow their steam. But Florio said, nope, Dirk Cutter.
Cutter said, I don't want to hear it, right? I don't want to hear it. First of all, I don't know why he said it 2 years later, Steve. You know, this is draft time right now. But look, Steve, I'm not going to be hypocritical. I've said on this podcast, I think a year ago, that, you know, Cutter's not a bad guy. But he's wrapped a little tight, and he bristles at criticism, and he's not the only head coach, Steve, that does so. You know, Brian Billick comes to mind. When Billick was the head coach, you know, you don't dare question Brian Billick, or he'll give you that withering look, Steve. Bill Belichick doesn't like to be second-guessed. No, nobody does, Steve. But, you know, when Cutter became the Bucks head coach, Steve, January 2016. You know, now he's not just the offensive coordinator. Now he's the head coach. So I checked with some of my people in Arizona, you know, that covered Cutter at Arizona State. The word came down right then and there. This is more than 2 years ago. Doesn't take criticism well. Doesn't take it well. Again, he's not alone in this. Whether you consider that a weakness, you don't consider it a weakness, but, you know, it seems to be the way it is. And Cutter bristled at the suggestion. Now, here's what's funny, Steve. Tell me if I misinterpreted what Florio was saying. I don't think Florio on the air with Cutter was even talking about conspiring with Light to get rid of Lovie Smith. I think it was more like, hey, didn't the Glazers run it past you? Like, hey, would you be interested in this job if we make a coaching change? To me, you know, that's a lot less vindictive than trying to say that he conspired with the general manager to get rid of the head coach. To me, it was just like, hey, basically, we're making a coaching change. Would you be interested in the job? Who could fault Cutter for saying yes? You know, Florio threw it out there like, well, maybe Cutter could have said, no, I'm loyal to Lovie, but that's not realistic. Steve, the decision was made that they were going to move on from Lovie Smith.
Yeah, here's where I think Florio's wrong. Florio's contention was that it's very logical and likely that the Glazers, before they fired Lovie, would have gone to Dirk and say, hey, if we made a change, would you be interested in the job?
And that's no bad on Cutter. No bad on Cutter for that.
No, but I don't think, my point is, I don't think that's what happened. So that's why it threw Cutter for a loop. Because I think, personally, just my opinion, I don't think the Glazers decided to fire Lovie till they convened, you know, their threesome vote a day after the season and got together and said, are we going to do this or what? That's just my opinion, especially since the Bucks got to 6-6. A lot of excitement. December, they had a shot, and then they went in the toilet. It's interesting that it comes out that Cutter, right into his new job, Ira, he's on cloud nine. He's been waiting
his whole career for this.
His whole life to get this shot. And he gets the shot, and he gets to hire one of his best friends in the world in Mike Smith.
And he's got his quarterback. Here we go.
And he's got his guy, and they just were the top 10 offense. Oh, my goodness. He doesn't have to move his family again. His son's in high school, and Dirk's talked many times about how he regrets how his family had to move or move so many years. And he's that wound that tight. It's interesting, and it speaks to that sort of how Cutter is, and I like it. It's real. If he's annoyed and doesn't like Mike Florio or me, I'd love to hear.
I think in Cutter's mind, Steve, and I think this is a fair to surmise this, I think he probably believed that Florio was implying that he and Light, or just maybe him, sabotaged Lovie Smith, and he didn't like that. And can you really blame Dirk Cutter for not liking that kind of implication? I mean, there's something to be said for that. Now, Florio said that's not what he asked. Florio said all he asked was, you know, didn't the Glazers run something past you, which, to me, that doesn't make Cutter guilty of anything. The real implication that's damning is, did you conspire to undermine Lovie Smith? Florio said he didn't even ask him that. So, you know, I didn't hear that. I didn't hear him on air at the time with Cutter. Did you actually hear it?
I did, and it didn't strike me as, ooh, how could he ask him that? It was kind of gentle, but the implication was, hey, do you have anything to say about this perception kind of thing? So I get it. It's just a neat little piece of Bucks history where the coach did this, and it's a neat little story. I knew about it the day after it happened, Ira. I was at the owners' meetings. Mike Florio, who's a friend of mine, he said, hey.
I remember you telling me about that, Steve. I do.
He said, hey, you know, last night, let me run something by you. And I'm not going to share what Florio shared, but because he didn't call me up and say, hey, now you can talk about it, that I can. But, and you know, Ira, there are other stories eventually that will come out about Dirk Cutter having other confrontations. So it wasn't a Florio-specific thing.
I can relate to Florio. I can relate to him.
And my concern as it relates to the current Bucks is, if the pressure really ramps up on Cutter, they go 8-5, and all of a sudden they're 8-7 this year, and you know,
and the offense is stifled.
That's
not moving the ball.
You know, a coach who's wound too tight with all that pressure and fourth year with the offense, you know, maybe he has a blow up at some point, which would be great entertainment, but that's not good for the team.
I think that's fair, Steve. If things go well, what do they say? It's the great deodorant, the great disinfectant. I thought Cutter held up pretty well last year. I mean, well, we got to give him his props, Steve. He had a couple of testy press conferences. Nothing terrible. He took me on a couple of times, Roy Cummings a couple of times.
He barked at Jenna Lane after the season. There was that backhanded comment. You didn't like that.
Yeah, but he wasn't out of control or anything like that, Steve. And they were 5-11. So I dare say if they go 5-11 again, there's not going to be a lot of Dirk Cutter conferences going down the line after that.
No, I think then he might be making some friends. Hey, you know, guys, how are you?
Well, it might be in the media. You never know.
I don't think Dirk Cutter would ever be in the media. All right, Ira, as far as the draft goes, now, I know you love the fans. You're looking forward to pressing the flesh, but you also like to know what the fans are thinking. And we ran a poll yesterday on JoeBucksFan.com, and I asked the fans, what's your preference with the number 7 overall pick? And
what were the choices?
Trade up, 6.5%. Trade down, 59% want the Bucks to trade down. They don't even want them to stay there.
What else?
Keep the pick, 22% unsure, 11.5%. That's over 1,000 votes, Ira. So what does it tell you that most fans want the general manager to trade down? That speaks to me real quick. I would say that says great things about their confidence in the GM.
That's one way to look at it, Steve. You could also look at it that I think that implies that the assumption for me is those Buck fans, by a wide majority, don't think any of the big three are going to be on the board, Steve, at number 7. Because I think if Chubb, Barkley, or Nelson are there, I don't think 59% of Buck fans would want Light to trade back at that point. I think that's my takeaway, is they think those three guys are going to be gone. And you know what? The rest is a crapshoot. The same guy we can get at 7, we can get at 12, so let Buffalo move up. and let's recoup that third round pick, maybe even getting a second round pick.
And that's a good way to look at it.
I think that's the way I look at it.
And I would agree with you. It seems like most fans agree with you. Trade down. They're saying trade down now because, hey, those guys aren't going to be there. So let's.
Well,
let's
I ain't trading down until I know that they're not going to be there. I'm not trading down, you know, Thursday afternoon. I'm not doing that. I'll tell you that right now.
Why not? If the price is right.
How do I know I won't get Barkley at 7? I mean, how do I know? How do I know?
If the Bills come to you, Ira, with those two first round picks and one next year and some other goodie.
If Buffalo's desperate, it would be tough to turn him down.
It's tough. You know. And what did you make of Jason Light at his news conference a couple of weeks ago, or last week rather, saying that, hey, there were a lot of calls to trade down for Mike Evans, but I held firm and we got Mike Evans. What did you make of that, and what did you think of that?
Well, I'm assuming it's true and not BS, which, you know, Light admits is in the air in the month of April. Just like pollen, you know, I think there's more BS than pollen in NFL circles. First of all, I'm glad he didn't trade down because Mike Evans is a heck of a player. And I said for most of last year, I thought Mike Evans was the best player on the Buccaneers. By the time the season ends, I don't think I could say that. I don't think he had a great season, Mike Evans. I think he had a good season. But, you know, what did he get, 5 touchdowns? I think it was 5. Mike Evans got to do better than that. And part of that's on Cutter. Part of it's on Winston. You got to go to Mike Evans from the 12-yard line, you know, on third and goal from the 12. You got to go to Mike Evans, even if he's covered. You give him a chance.
There was
they got away from that a little bit last year.
I think the biggest problem, you know, having gone back and watched the games so many times, and this is probably says a lot, but so many times Evans would get single coverage in the red zone. Jameis will recognize it, and he always went to Evans, single coverage in the red zone. I'll take my guy in the end zone. But their percentage on that play was nowhere near good enough. And that's a huge problem.
Well, all I know is a couple of years, Mike Evans scored 11 touchdowns. You know, last year, yeah, I think he had 5. So, to me, that's not acceptable. Anyway, I'm glad he didn't trade back. You know, this was his first Buck draft, his first draft as a general manager. First guy Jason Light ever picked is a Pro Bowler. Mike Evans. So bravo, Jason Light. Not everybody would have took Mike Evans at number 7. It was not a no-brainer. I mean, Mike Evans was certainly a first-round talent. But not every GM would have took Mike Evans at number 7. Jason Light did. And there's no looking back. He just got his second contract, well-deserved.
Yeah, it was a bit of a bizarre draft, the Austin Seferian Jenkins pick when you didn't need a tight end. And some fans, Ira, some of the commenters, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about grading Jason Light. There's so many angles to grade the guy. You know, it's very easy for fans to say, well, if Seferian Jenkins panned out, you wouldn't have wasted the pick on O.J. Howard because they're the same player. They're the same player.
That's exactly right. So there's ramifications.
Yeah, ramifications. And
Jason Light, you know, Steve, Jason Light needs a draft like 2015. Now, he doesn't have a third-round pick right now. That 2015 draft, I think, in retrospect, I think it was the best draft any team had in 2015. That's on Jason Light. That's probably the biggest reason I gave him an A-minus overall, which most Buck fans think it's a little high. That draft was an A++. And that's if Jameis Winston turns out to be the player we think he is. He's not there yet, Winston. But imagine if he is. Imagine if Winston is a Pro Bowler this year, 29 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and the Bucs go 10-6. That draft is sensational.
Yeah.
Sensational.
If Jameis breaks through, and let's say he's even just a top 5 quarterback in the NFC, top 10 in the NFL, that draft turns into historic proportions. Franchise quarterback, bedrock.
Face of the defense.
Bedrock of the line, face of the defense. But, yeah, that's the big thing we're playing for this season and that Jason Light's playing for as well.
If he could come away with another 3 starters, Steve, that's high cotton. 3 starters in this draft, boy, it would be tough not to extend Jason Light's contract at the end of the season.
All right, Ira, 3 quick ones on the podcast. 3 quick things. 1, what do you make of the Bucs agreeing to have a parrot at Raymond James Stadium announce their third-day draft pick or picks?
Well, I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but I think it's funny. As long as a dodo bird's not making the first round pick, I'm okay with it. and don't take that personal, Jason, because you know I just gave you an A-. A lot of people, you know what, if it wasn't the Bucks, nobody'd make a big deal about it. But, you know, the Bucks are a comical franchise to begin with. So it adds to the humor. It just adds to the humor.
It adds to the soap opera.
What's the matter? Sam Crane wasn't available? Yeah, you know.
All right, Ira, you know, I sort of rocked Buccaneers Nation a little bit the other night by putting out the story that the NFL may suspend Winston.
That was a hell of a story.
Well, thank you, Ira, for not reporting his allegation leveled against him with Uber.
This is aside from his guilt.
In a timely fashion, right. So he didn't report in a timely fashion, and the NFL rules specifically state you have to do that. And the conduct policy that was in effect when this when Jameis had this allegation from Uber doesn't say players have to report it, but it says teams have to educate players of their obligation to report, which is a hair to split there, but the bottom line is
that's a gray area.
It's gray area, and the NFL, we know, can interpret things however they want. So this wasn't me interpreting the information. This is just reality of what it is. And then one could make the case, Ira, that when the new conduct policy came down late 2016, which was only revised in a few ways, when it was revised and said, hey, players have to report any allegation, true or not, if somehow it was true and it would violate, we got to know. You got to report everything. Jameis Winston knew that that thing was still hanging out there, and he should have come clean. And you know the organization was not pleased that he didn't, that they were hit with this as from behind from BuzzFeed, of all places. So, Ira, I'm just curious.
You would think, Steve, just on that matter, you know, not on the guilt or innocence of the allegation, but on that reporting charge, you know, I think the most draconian thing you would do is you would get a one-game suspension. And I don't even think it merits that. But I think that's the maximum Winston could get on that reporting angle. If he's exonerated on the other stuff, I can't see him sitting out more than one game. Can you? Just on that, on the reporting thing?
No, and that's what I would expect. You know, we've talked about this. Lee's mentioned it many times that the NFL's interest here is public relations. And if they determine that, hey, we're never going to really get the full truth on whatever did or did not happen with Jameis.
But if they want to make him an example in another way.
But they, unfortunately, this reporting thing gives them ammo to make him an example and go to Jameis and say, look, we don't have the whole story here, but we do know you didn't report it. And will you take your one-game suspension and we'll brush it aside? And in that, we'll say that it's unclear, but we don't like the way this, you know, blah, 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 blah.
What would be the basis of a Winston appeal at that point on the reporting angle? Would he say it's a gray area?
He appealed. But I think more likely that the NFL comes to Jameis and says, look, we don't have the facts of the whole issue. It's sticky here. It's a bad look.
Just take one game for not reporting.
Just take one game and this all goes away. I don't think Jameis would appeal that.
Yeah.
So, but I hate the fact that the NFL seems to probably have some leverage on him with this reporting issue. And if they go to the Bucks, and this is what fans don't understand, if the league goes to the Bucks and says, hey, Bucks, when we, back in 2014 or when Jameis was drafted, did you tell him he had to report anything that could potentially be a violation of the code?
That could come up at a symposium, a rookie symposium.
Of course it does. All the players are told this. If they say, hey, Bucks, did you let Jameis know? They're going to say, yeah, of course we let all our players know. And then they got him. So it's messy, but I was curious your thought, but I'm glad you liked it, Ira.
Steve, aside from whether he did it or not, he used poor judgment by not telling the Bucks what was going on. And I think he probably knew a little bit more. I think he probably knew why it was suspended. But at least he knew it was suspended. There's no mystery about that. And that was more than 2 years ago, and he didn't inform the Bucks till last year.
All right, Ira, we're going to leave it there on a high note. The over-under on shots tonight remains 6. Appreciate listening to the podcast.
Can't wait to get that wristband, Steve. That wristband, it's all about the wristband, baby.
Get a napkin, Ira.